Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. When investment performance matters, make sure your savings are with Zurich. Visit Zurich.ie to find out more.
Now, you heard it on the headlines there. The European Medicines Agency has found a possible link between the Johnson & Johnson COVID-19 vaccine and very rare cases of unusual blood clots with low blood platelets. They recommend it's listed as a side effect, but maintain the benefits outweigh the risks. Speaking in the last hour, Dr. Sabine Strauss of the agency's risk committee said that of the 7 million vaccinated with this jab in the US, 8 cases have been recorded, but no risk factors have yet been identified, she said. And now, in a moment, we'll speak to a consultant haematologist, Dr. Maeve Crowley. But first, Naomi O'Leary, Europe correspondent with the Irish Times, is with us. Naomi, you're very welcome to the programme. You've been following this all afternoon. Was it in any way a surprise to members of the press and clinicians listening, do you think?
I think it was very much in line with what certainly I was expecting, given the similarities with the previous safety review that there was with the AstraZeneca vaccine. So we're talking about two pretty similar vaccines, both for COVID-19 and both based on similar technology. And the side effect, the reports of these blood clot cases are very, very similar in both cases. It's clots in unusual places combined with low platelet levels in the blood. And in both cases, what the European Medicines Agency has said is that the benefits outweigh the risks. COVID-19 is a very serious disease, sends people to hospital, kills people, and that they recommend that this vaccine is safe for use, with a warning basically in the product information that it's a very rare side effect that some people develop these blood clots. And they've also issued advice to clinicians and to patients to be on the lookout for certain side effects, including severe headaches and leg swelling and things like that, because it's important to get medical attention if you do get a side effect.
And this is the abundance of caution that regulators and governments across the European Union mentioned when Johnson & Johnson paused the European rollout last week. So this is, in a way, what they were waiting for. Do we know when that rollout will start up again then?
Yeah, so the decision by Johnson & Johnson to pause deliveries was just something quite unexpected, taken by itself. And there isn't, they didn't say that we're going to restart it if the EMA says that it's all okay. They just didn't give any information about that. I've contacted the company to ask when they'll resume deliveries without hearing back. As far as the European Medicines Agency is concerned, this vaccine has always been approved. They approved it already earlier in the year, and it still remains approved. They haven't changed that assessment based on these 8 cases from the United States. Just adding a warning to the patient information, as I said. But it is really important for EU countries that are waiting on vaccine deliveries that they come through, because it would make a big difference to national
vaccines. Well, it would make a big difference here, Naomi, as you know, wouldn't it? Because there's talk here, there's consideration of increasing the interval between dose 1 and dose 2 in our vaccine rollout programme to basically cover as many people as possible, as quickly as possible. But whether we get the Johnson & Johnson deliveries will feed into that. Now, I know Johnson & Johnson are due to deliver 55 million doses in Europe before the end of the second quarter, I think by the end of June. So how quickly will we get those, you know?
They started delivering them just about 2 weeks ago and then immediately paused them. So the doses are there. I think many EU countries will be hoping that they'll start to get immediately again delivering them. When they paused them, it was after the regulatory authorities in the United States, out of caution, paused the rollout there, pending review, and they haven't yet resumed it. They're going to keep looking to see if any more people develop side effects before they do that. But it would certainly make a huge difference, particularly because, bearing in mind, this is a single-shot vaccine. So it goes as twice as far as the Pfizer or the AstraZeneca or one of those. It's just one and done, and it makes it a lot logistically easier to roll out.
So it's much sought after by various countries. Can I ask you, Naomi, about an element of the press conference at the this afternoon, the EMA's Eimear Cook, she was saying that this decision would allow member states to make up their own minds, make their own decisions on how to roll out the vaccine based on their own national situations in terms of whatever matrices they use, infection rates or hospitalizations or ICU admissions or so on. Now, this is very similar to what happened and what was said about AstraZeneca, that vaccine. But that annoyed, didn't it, health ministers and governments in various countries, because they wanted more direct information and direction from the central agency, the EMA.
Yeah, well, they've said, you know, it's fine for use. With the AstraZeneca case, they said, you know, we're not advocating any restriction for any age groups. But, you know, national authorities went ahead and decided to take a more conservative view anyway. And they have the power to do that. You know, the countries are sovereign and their national regulators have the power to do that. They don't even need to wait for EMA approval of vaccines at all. They can go ahead and approve whatever they want if they want to. So, you know, it's ultimately in the hands of national regulators. And I think what Eimear Cook was noting is that maybe just explaining that the reason why some national regulators make different decisions is because there are different circumstances in different countries. Some countries don't have many infections. Some countries have greater access to alternative vaccines. And so that means it's a different risk analysis. Mm-hmm. It would be a different risk analysis for someone who's, say, working with COVID-19 patients. They would be highly exposed, so it would probably be a better idea for them to be vaccinated than someone who's not going to come into in contact with it at all. And so that's what the different national decisions are coming out of.
And that is the truth of it, based on what you heard at the press conference today. But I suppose politicians want international imprimatur when they're making their own decisions domestically. We'll leave you go, Naomi O'Leary of the Irish Times. Thank you very much indeed. I might turn now to Dr. Maeve Crowley, who's a consultant haematologist in the Comprehensive Coagulation Centre in Cork University Hospital. Doctor, you're very welcome to the programme.
Thanks for having me on, Cormac.
I'd love to get your opinion on what the EMA has said today. They're saying basically the benefits of the COVID or the Johnson & Johnson COVID-19 vaccine outweigh the risks, and the warning that should be listed as a side effect here, the rare blood clotting event.
Well, I think, Cormac, this is not an unexpected announcement. I think in the last hour or so, the International Society of Thrombosis and Hemostasis, which would be kind of the society that links scientists and medical personnel who manage patients with bleeding and clotting disorders, have put out a statement endorsing vaccination in general, as the risks of vaccination are far exceeded by the risks of COVID-19 infection. And they've specifically said that AstraZeneca and Johnson & Johnson vaccines can continue to be used. So this is kind of really reassuring from us. I think in general, the population of Ireland should be really reassured that the European Medicines Agency and NIAC consider safety very, very carefully. So there's been pauses, there's been huge thought. This is an evolving situation.
Mm-hmm.
And they're looking at all the safety data that's feeding in. The Johnson & Johnson data is from the United States. The AstraZeneca data is mainly from Europe. And they're considering it. And as things change, their guidance is evolving.
And never, Maeve, has the development of a vaccine or various vaccines been scrutinised by the average Joe Soap as these sets of vaccines have been. And I suppose when you're a layperson, you're frightened by a rare event. So even at the press conference today, they referred to eight cases, one in trials and seven in the US with mm-hmm. one death out of, 7 million vaccinations,
yes.
Which is, it's such a rarity, but still it frightens the average person listening. I mean, is there anything you can do or anyone can do to reassure people?
Well, I think it's really understandable that people are worried, because when you talk about this kind of, you're giving a vaccine to well people and then you're saying that this many people got a bad side effect, and you hear about people getting serious blood clots and people dying, and then you're kind of going, well, I'm well now, I don't want anything. But actually, you need to balance that with the I'm well now, but if I get COVID-19 infection, if you get serious infection, then your risk of getting a blood clot is about 1 in 5. So I think it's really hard to balance those risks when you kind of, when all over the media, there's just the side effects of the vaccination. Mm-hmm. It's harder to look at it and go, actually, the huge benefits of the vaccination. But we're seeing that in Israel. We're seeing that in the United Kingdom, which are both opening up to kind of to normal life a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. Can we talk a little bit about the clotting events themselves?
Sure.
And in that rarest of rare events, if it were to happen, is it something that can be treated? What kind of a clotting event does occur?
So I think in generally, one the most common clots that we see in clinical practice are clots in the lungs called pulmonary embolus, or clots in the legs, which is better known as deep vein thrombosis. So these are our common clots. It seems to be a little different with the vaccine-associated clots. So they seem to be more commonly cerebral venous sinus thrombosis. So that's a clot in the veins in your, around your brain, or a splanchnic vein thrombosis. So that's a clot in one of the abdominal veins. Okay, so these are different. And if we think about it, kind of cerebral venous sinus thrombosis clots occur approximately 2 to 5 per million people per year in kind of the background level. Mm-hmm. So these are rare clots that we don't see very often.
So when you compare then the risk of a rare clotting event after the Johnson & Johnson vaccine versus the AstraZeneca vaccine, I mean, are they very broadly similar?
So I think the problem is they're both rare. So if anything kind of different happens, it throws the numbers off a lot. The difference with the vaccine-induced thrombosis seems to be the low blood or low platelet count, and platelets are one of the cells that help blood clotting. So the platelet count is low, and there's other signs of kind of a bleeding problem, a DIC problem. So there's an alteration in your basic coagulation. So if you think about it, basically we're designed with proteins that cause blood clotting and proteins that stop blood clotting, and they're in balance. So what we want to do is keep blood liquid in our blood vessels, and then if we get some damage to the vessels, we need it to clot off in a very specific way to stop us bleeding out. If this balance is disturbed, then we get kind of what we call a pathological clot, or a clot that's spreading and is uncontrolled.
Mm-hmm. I want to move on from this for just a second, but I find this fascinating, even though it's highly technical. But if it occurs, the clotting event, mm-hmm. can it be treated readily?
Yes, and I think in the earlier reports, patients did very badly, but this was an unexpected event, so that we weren't looking for it. We weren't screening people. As I said, usually if you come to medical attention, you have a headache. We're not expecting it to be a cerebral venous sinus thrombosis. That is way down our list. But now we know that if you've recently had an AstraZeneca or a Johnson & Johnson vaccine, that we really need to outrule a cerebral venous sinus thrombosis. And nationally and internationally, there's protocols about looking at people with these symptoms, looking at their platelet count, looking mm-hmm. at their blood clotting, and then managing them quite aggressively. So now that we know what we're looking at,
so you're more prepared, basically,
yes,
as a clinician. Can I ask you finally, after we've heard from EMA today, it's basically over to you, NIAC, isn't it, in terms
yes.
of what NIAC does or proposes mm-hmm. to government on how to use the Johnson & Johnson vaccine? Now, we know they proposed to use AstraZeneca on an age-restricted basis. Do you think they'll do something similar now with Johnson & Johnson?
I suppose that I would leave that up to NIAC, but I know that in the US data for Johnson & Johnson, all the events were in people under 60, so a similar approach would not be unexpected. But again, they will have a lot more detailed data to review before they make their decision.
Okay, well, look, we will await their decision then. Thank you very much indeed for sharing your expertise on this. That's Dr. Maeve Crowley, who is a consultant haematologist, and beforehand, Naomi O'Leary, Europe correspondent with the Irish Times. Now,